Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at theopenhouse.net.au blog site.
Asylum seekers certainly creating headlines worldwide as thousands flee troubled regions hoping for a better life. The Tamil refugees intercepted in Indonesia this week ended their hunger strike yesterday, but are still refusing to leave their boat. And the Australian Navy is on standby to help rescue two more boats in distress in Indonesian waters, possibly loaded with 270 asylum seekers. Prime Minister Kevin Rudd has responded by condemning the act of people smuggling. He's also said to be in talks with Jakarta, seeking a new strategy to stop refugee boats from travelling through Indonesian waters to Australia. The critics, of course, say it's just simply too simplistic. I'd love to know your view. Bruce Haig is a former diplomat who has dealt with refugee issues for more than 40 years. He previously served on the Refugee Review Tribunal, and he joins us now. Bruce Haig, welcome to Open House. Thanks for your time.
Oh, good afternoon.
Yeah, good evening.
Good evening, I should say.
and all of the above. Now, you've had so many years as a diplomat, and I believe you worked in Sri Lanka, Afghanistan, Pakistan, Iran, Saudi Arabia, South Africa. I mean, you're well aware of the type of situations that people in these kinds of war-torn nations are facing.
Mm.
Give us a bit of a background on what the Tamils of Sri Lanka are actually fleeing from.
Right, well, the situation in Sri Lanka is that there was a long-running civil war, and because the Tamils, the minority group, who'd been in Sri Lanka for 1,000 years, along with the Sinhalese, who'd been there for an equal period of time, formed before the British arrived three kingdoms. And after the British came to Sri Lanka, colonised Sri Lanka, they pulled all those kingdoms together. The Tamils became, by and large, they became the administrators, bookkeepers and so on in the British administration. When the British left, the Sinhalese, I suppose you'd say they were jealous, but it was a race thing, and the Sinhalese refused to allow Tamil as one of the languages in Ceylon, as it then was, Sri Lanka as it now is, and it went downhill from then on, culminating in some very bad race riots and in 1983, and then the Tamils became more militant, not having the resources of the state at their disposal. They turned to irregular means of conducting warfare, which we these days call terrorism, which the ANC did in South Africa and other people have done at different times. They've been condemned for that, but really they didn't have that many resources in which to fight their war. They were very aggressive and ruthless about trying to establish an independent homeland for themselves. And they've failed, and they failed because huge resources were poured into the into Sri Lanka under the name of the War on Terror by the Bush administration, and they've been crushed. And there's 300,000 of them now living in camps guarded by the military in Sri Lanka, and the conditions are appalling.
What kind of conditions?
Well, the conditions are that currently, the older people and very young people are succumbing to the illnesses and dying at a rate of several hundred per month. So, and the Sri Lankan government won't allow the international media into these camps. It's kept out the bulk of NGOs, all NGOs except those which are prepared to comply with the conditions laid down by the Sri Lankan government, and they're pretty stringent conditions, not the sort of conditions that a lot of agencies would want to comply with anyway. And medical supplies, food supplies are all, and sanitation are all minimal, and we're now moving into the monsoon season. I think the people that we're seeing on boats are people who are outside of those camps, although there was an Australian citizen who was held in those camps who bribed her way out and came to Australia. She's reluctant to identify herself just yet because of other relatives that are there, but we don't know how many more Australian citizens may be in those camps.
Okay, I guess there's a couple of angles at which to look at this whole issue. I mean, there's a number of angles, but a couple for us to talk about now. Number one is the actual group of Tamils that we've seen in the media this week on that boat.
Yeah.
And number two, then, the issue of refugees in general, and in particular, say, you know, those Tamils that are also seeking some sort of refuge. Firstly, that particular group you just mentioned there, they may not have been from the actual camps. Why do you think that?
Because the camps are pretty well guarded. The camps are guarded by the military. They may have been. I mean, I don't know where they've come from, but we do know that the camps themselves are pretty under pretty tight security.
Mm-hmm.
Some people have been released from those camps, about 58,000, which is not many. And if they may, these people may be from those early groups that or groups that were released early.
Okay. All right. So. That takes us, of course, into the whole issue of we have particular measures that are actually put into place in Australia, whereby we take a certain amount, I think it's 14,000 refugees every year, and they should wait in line versus jumping onto a boat, paying a people smuggler to actually come here.
Yeah.
Should this group be treated any differently to other refugee seekers or asylum seekers in any way, do you think, because of the fact that maybe they weren't a part of those camps?
Yes, but see, that's not what refugees are. This business of taking people like that is terrific and it's very good, but that's this government and the previous government trying to put refugees into the category of immigrants, which they're not. A refugee is a person who flees persecution and in fear of their life or in fear of torture or things that are associated with that.
Mm-hmm.
And that the Refugee Convention is quite clear when it says that that people who turn up on your border, whether it's in Europe or in Pakistan or in Australia, you have to allow them to come in, and then you process them to make sure that they're genuine refugees, because, of course, you do get people who are not genuine refugees.
Mm.
And at this point, we should say, right at the outset, that the bulk of people coming to Australia who apply for refugee status come by plane, and the bulk of people who overstay in this country come by plane.
Mm-hmm.
There is something like, at the moment, 80 or 90,000 people in Australia who've overstayed their visas. There's a market out there for Australian visas. So people come in on false business visas, tourist visas, and student visas. Some of them are genuine visas, and then when they get here, they then say, well, yes, but we want to apply for refugee status. Very few of those people are genuine refugees.
Mm-hmm. So when people...
ones coming by boat, most of them, if not all of them, are genuine refugees, and they're very small numbers. And we're a country that could quite easily take 10, 12,000 boat people a year, but it's a primal fear that people in Australia have that we're going to be swamped by boat.
Yes,
it's been around since the 1850s,
yeah.
And it's irrational, and quite frankly, it's childish. And it's that which is driving this particular policy, which is totally lacking in humanity, it's totally lacking in common sense, and it's cruel.
Okay, this is Open House Across the Nation. I'd like your views, 1-300-40-2020, to what you've just heard Bruce Hague say there, that we're being cruel by not allowing more people, particularly boat people, into the nation. Do you feel that also, or do you have a different view? I'd love to hear. 1-300-40-2020. Bruce, of course, the counteraction to that is by allowing more boat people in, we're sending a message, and boat people, people smugglers in particular, and it looks like there's some suggestion there that these people smugglers got something like $4 million fee to actually bring these people in. So the people smugglers themselves just kind of get more work and actually are allowed to ply their evil trade more. What are your feelings there?
It's not an evil trade, and they're not. There's no such thing as people smugglers. There is in Indonesia, and the people that are running people smuggling in Indonesia are the military and the police. But people smugglers, this trade has come about because the people with boats have been approached by people who are desperate with money.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's where the debate in this country is so childish. I mean, there would be no such thing as a people smuggler were there not a need. So you're talking about a demand out there. This demand may grow with climate change and all the rest of it, and we have to work out how we're going to respond to these sorts of things, how we're going to respond to people in the Pacific and so on. But that requires some hard-headed, clear-thinking, compassionate thought, not the sort of nonsense we've been seeing in recent days. And let me say that I'm a people smuggler. When I was in South Africa and there were people who'd been tortured in prison, black people who'd been tortured in prison, some whites, I was quite prepared to take them out of the country into a safe haven because I had diplomatic plates on my car. I took Donald Woods out of South Africa, newspaper editor, and helped his family join him. And that was shown in the film Cry Freedom. So I'm a people smuggler, and I think that you'd have to say that the people respond, sometimes respond to other people's desperate needs with compassion. Money plays a part when you're a poor fisherman with a boat, your catches are down. Yes, you're going to be tempted. And if people are desperate, of course they'll find the money from relatives in wherever they may be around the world, whether they're in Australia, in Canada, in India or whatever, will put up the money to get their relatives out, as you would, as I would, as anybody else would. And I ask your listeners to put themselves in the position of Australia being in a civil war, and they're on the losing side, let's say, and they want to go to New Zealand, and New Zealand says, no, we're not taking you. How would you feel, and how would they feel, and what would you do? Or you wanted to get to, you went to Papua New Guinea or any of the neighbouring countries, and they all said, no, I'm sorry, we're not interested. And you knew if you came back here, you're going to be, at best, you're going to live in appalling conditions. At worst, you're going to be killed.
I very much resonate with what you're actually saying there. 1-300-40-20-20 for your feelings as you listen to what Bruce has to say. Of course, Bruce, there were comments made this week, though, that we haven't seen enough accommodation for our Indigenous people, let alone taking some of those buildings that are actually on their way up to Darwin from Alice Springs. We're going to send them over to Christmas Island so that we can actually house more boat people on Christmas Island. And the issue there is that we're not looking after our own versus looking after other people who want to come in. What are your thoughts there?
Well, it's a nonsense debate. This whole business of Christmas Island and the gulag that they've put on Christmas Island, you can process people on shore. The previous government decided that they didn't want to process people on shore because they had access to the courts, which they're entitled to under the United Nations Refugee Convention, of which we're a signatory. But more importantly, we've incorporated that convention into our own laws. So when you hear people in government and opposition talking about illegal immigrants, when they're talking about various measures that they've put in place, they're actually going against Australian law. When these matters go before the Refugee Review Tribunal, the Federal Court or the High Court takes that into account, obviously, because that's Australian law. But in the rhetoric that's being pushed around at the moment in the media, it's not. And I don't think there's a general recognition that that the language that people are using is actually outside of Australian law, which the courts in this country uphold. So they decided to push people to Nauru and to Christmas Island, to all these other places, so that they wouldn't have access to Australian law, which in itself is illegal. We're talking here about very few people. Mm-hmm. This country is taking, in terms of immigrants, new immigrants into the country, 140,000 a year. We're talking about boat people who at most might number 40,000 a year. These people, I've had a lot to do with Hazaras who are from Afghanistan because I was posted there, and some came to the town where I live, and we've took them under our wing, got their wives and children here. And, of course, they're on TBVs, which is a terrible, terrible visa. And now they're working. They're part of the Australian community. Their children are at school. But more importantly, these people have never applied for and never wanted to go on the dole. They have fought to find work. They've travelled from Shepparton to Queensland, back to New South Wales, chasing work. These people are model citizens, if you like. They've been given very few opportunities. They've had very few chances to learn English. There's another kid that we're helping through university. He's got his father does agricultural work. He's got three brothers and sisters, and he himself was full-time at university getting straight A's in mathematics and science, and also working full-time or almost full-time to get the money to support himself and other members of his family. Now, that's the sort of person that comes here. Can I say to you that every single Tamil person in Australia, and there's 30,000 of them, are professionals? Mm. Can I repeat that? Professionals. Now, this is a terrible debate we're having in this country. It is a shocker. We look like selfish, myopic, inwardly gazing people. We have the capacity to take these people. You don't think that the people around the rest of the world don't think that we're selfish. They are. And if we think we're going to have any chance of getting onto the Security Council, forget it, because we have such a poor image overseas. And this particular incident is feeding into it.
Plenty of calls on your response and your feedback as to what Bruce is saying. Hi, Sina.
Hi, how you going?
Yeah, well, thank you. You're an Indigenous Australian?
Oh, I'm an Aboriginal Australian, yes.
Tell me your view then, because, the Indigenous argument has been brought into this week by saying by taking some of the housing that was meant on its way for Indigenous Australians, it's being sent over to Christmas Island instead. Thereby, the argument is we're not looking after our own. How do you feel about that?
Oh, look, we all know that the Aboriginal people haven't been looked at the full stop. Secondly, as far as the Tamil situation and the refugees fleeing, under the United Nations, I do believe that everyone that does seek refugee status has to be a process and then approved if they do, are actually legit refugees. I think that given that the government that's now in power maintains its stand on the Aboriginal people in this country, no different to the past government. Mm-hmm. To me, it's no surprise that he does maintain the stand that he does on the refugee status. I think that anyone with compassion and with heart would understand that everyone in this country, if they had a voice, would say, I think there's equal amount of bedding in this, great land of ours.
Mm-hmm.
The national anthem sort of states that. I do believe that if we had a billeting program or we had some sort of established system that the government could be proud to say, yep, we are very much aware of the whole world and what situations are going on in Afghanistan, the massacres that happened in Africa, the Solomon Islands getting obliterated, Indonesia, Philippines and all of that. I do think that if they had a proud system already in place, then they could say, yep, we have got the means to process these people. But what the government is saying is that we don't have system already established.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, when the politicians do go overseas and they all get to meet and have fancy meals and all these people are starving, are tortured, what they're saying is this is a token gesture and it's all about image. It's not about taking care of the constituents in its country, and that has then the roll-on effect of people for the people that are in those situations to come to Australia, quite frankly.
Mm.
I've thought, we've got enough land, we've got enough, people have the heart, the generous nature like the Australian people do. We're one of the biggest charitable, countries in the world.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see why we cannot, afford to have a billeting system or a proper system already in place to accommodate people in this situation. Mm. And it's only going to get worse.
Yeah.
Global climate as well as, social change and all the, horror that falls into that category. I think we've got the right to be able to say, as a constituent, I've got a voice, and I'm telling the government that I think, you're being a fool to think that this is only just going to, happen odd here and there. I do understand border security, but quite honestly, I just don't see a compassion of a government
Okay. Yeah, I think you're right, Sina, in the sense that all the commentators are actually suggesting that this could only be a problem that gets worse. Bruce Haig, what would happen if the government was to do just what Sina actually suggested there, and very eloquently she actually suggested it too, in the sense that there was a much more compassionate stand whereby we did have some sort of system here? Wouldn't that, we can't be too simplistic the other way either.
Mm.
Couldn't that just kind of go, right, well, the doors are open and
suddenly... No, there's no doors open with refugees. Refugees, under the convention, there's no such thing as a doorway. There's an archway. And people pass through it. That's the whole purpose of the convention, which came out of what happened to people in Europe during the Second World War. At the end of the war, they decided to come up with a convention that could look after people who had to flee their homes. I think Sina's terrific. I mean, her ideas are just spot on. The one of the sad things has been that Aboriginal housing has not been addressed since this government came to power. I mean, it's just appalling that we're now, whatever it is, nearly 2 years into this government and still very few houses have been built. The fact that it's become an issue now highlights two things. One is the poor refugee policy, and two, the poor Aboriginal housing policy. I mean, I saw those containers that that put on the news. Nobody should have to live in those.
Yeah.
And to think that Aboriginals should have to live in those is equally as appalling. No, this is about compassion and it's about common sense.
Okay.
The only thing that would happen out of Sina's proposals is you would isolate the rednecks. And Mr. Rudd is in a position to be able to put in place strong policy because, as you know and I know, the opposition will not win the next election and they probably won't win the one after that. So he's in a position to lead, he's in a position to make tough decisions, in favour of ordinary people. Now, Mr Rudd says he lives by a certain set of principles. He's allowed us to see him photographed outside of churches. But I've got to say, from where I come from as a practicing Christian, he is not behaving as a Christian. And that is a very, very serious charge to put against anybody. But you know and I know what Christian principles are, and they are not applying here in this country with regard to these people.
1-300-40-2020 is my number. Spiro, hello.
Hi, how are you?
Yeah, well, thank you. You came to Australia as a refugee?
Yes, I did, back in 1999.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and the thing is, I was speaking about, I was listening to the gentleman before, Bruce. It's Australia, it might not have the full Christian values that it has, but it has values of principles and of, you know, the and as Christians, I think we should obey the land of the law, like in the
law of the land,
you know,
yep.
Law, sorry.
Mm-hmm, you're right, yep.
I come from Iraq. I left my country when the war was happening as a child, you know, and we went as asylum seekers to Greece. And Greece has a very, very big problem with asylum seekers. So what we did is, back in the war, what happened, we went there, and then, you know, we tried a few times, and we had money, and, you know, we lost half of our money just by getting there. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, we had to live in a country. We couldn't speak the language. We couldn't, you know, and it's just, it
yep.
was...
How long
know,
were you there?
Very hard.
How long were you in Greece?
In Greece for 8 years.
8 years waiting, Greece. Yeah.
Yeah, we waited for 8 years, and we were trying to come to Australia for at least 8 years, and we tried about, I think, 20 to 21 times to come to Australia. And we were reapplying, you know, and what happened is we were getting rejected. We were kept on getting rejected, and there was a door of opportunity to come to Australia illegally to get a boat. It was run from Europe all the way to Asia, and from Asia you go to Australia somehow by boat.
Okay.
I didn't know. I was still young back then.
So you were offered
anyway,
this? Yeah.
Yeah, we were offered this, but we didn't, because we back then, you know, we believe in the law that I just said about, and we believe to do it legally, because Australia, you know, it did open a door when it came that time, and we did got accepted after 8 years. It doesn't mean that you have to come illegally, you know what I mean?
Okay, all right. I want to throw that one to Bruce, actually. Bruce, so we've also had a call from Edward. He says, I'm a Catholic Sri Lankan Sinhalese. We were also persecuted, but we came via the right channels. I believe these boat people are coming for economic reasons because of the economic crisis in Sri Lanka. There are people who, just like Spiro and just like Edward, were, even in Spiro's situation, were actually offered illegal means of coming to Australia, but they actually said, no, we want to abide by the law. What does it kind of say to those people who have waited years and years and years to come to Australia when they've gone through the right, you know, quote-unquote, the right legal channels?
No, that's not true. I mean, the refugee law, people should get a copy of the Australian Migration Act and get a copy of the Convention. This business of calling refugees illegal and illegal for coming by boat is wrong.
But official channels, official right? channels.
No, there's no such thing for a refugee. What are you going to do if you're in a situation where your house has been burnt, you've got an army that's it's the civil war situation that I referred to before, and you're being driven in front of that. And you get to a certain position where you can jump on a boat and say, go to New Zealand. Are you going to say, no, I won't, I'll go through official channels? Of course you don't. Now, as far as Edward's concerned, the Sinhalese have not been persecuted. That's not true to say that. If they've been persecuted, it's because of their own actions, okay? They would not sit down and negotiate with the Tamils, and I must say the Tamil hardliners wouldn't sit down and negotiate with the Sinhalese either. It was one of those dreadful situations. There was a peace brokered by the Norwegians, which broke down. One of the condemnations of Australia and other countries is that they did not get both sides together through the Commonwealth or the UN and seek a very firmly for a very strong settlement, just as the Australian government has not sought to have access to these camps, nor sought to get the Sri Lankan government to allow humanitarian assistance to people in these camps. So it can't now treat these people like it is when it hasn't even sought to ameliorate their suffering in Sri Lanka. As far as Spiros is concerned, you can't use the word illegal with respect to genuine refugees. It just doesn't apply. And that I have will probably write further on that issue, and I may even have something in the papers tomorrow. But the point is that the convention quite clearly states that people have a right to come. They get processed when they get here. Now, if you're talking about border security, the biggest single problem with border security in this country is through the ports, the shipping ports, and through the airports.
Mm-hmm.
The amount of contraband that's coming into this country, whether it's illegal drugs or weapons, is appalling. And that is coming because of various reasons, corruption, slackness. At the airports, airport security on issues, and we saw that with the bikie gang attack in Sydney not so long ago,
mm-hmm.
that the security at our airports, despite all the paraphernalia and so on, is pretty poor. The majority of people coming into this country who apply for refugee status or who have criminal intent, and that is apply for refugee status and get knocked back, or come into this country with criminal intent and just disappear into the woodwork, there's none coming by boat in that category.
Okay.
I can state that categorically. There are none coming by boat in that category.
Okay.
But they are coming by plane, and they are coming by boat. And in terms of contraband and other pornography and all those other bits and pieces that we don't want in this community, that's where the border security should be, and that's where it's not.
Okay. Bruce, I really appreciate your time tonight. You've certainly got us all thinking. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, Bruce Haig, former diplomat, spent years with the Refugee Review Tribunal, spent 40 years looking at refugee issues.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. Thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology. To hear more from Open House, visit theopenhouse.net.au.